This is For the Record program number 1129. Biopsyop Apocalypse Now, Part 6. The Magic Virus Theory, Part 2. This is being recorded on May the 11th of the year 2020. This is another live recording. I have been doing programs on the COVID-19 outbreak, even before it got that name, the coronavirus outbreak. For the record, 11-11 and counting. Deal with this. And we are going to talk about things for roughly the next hour. All of the other programs are up on the web. There is, let's see, 1126 will be part 2, 27 part 3, 28 part... Actually, I guess this is Biopsyop Apocalypse Now, part 5. So this is not part 6. In any event, we are going to be talking about various things, including I'm going to be reading from two scientific papers or submissions by scientists to GM Watch. That is a publication that is critical of genetically modified organisms. And we are going to be taking a look at whether or not the virus could have been made in the laboratory. That is a major bone of contention, and there are a number of things to consider in that regard. However, I'm going to begin by talking about some of the reasons why I have termed this a biopsyop. I think the reasons why I have also called it apocalypse are going to become sadly and tragically clear, if not already in time. The Federal Reserve published a paper that was put together by one of its scientists, a gentleman named Christian, K-R-I-S-T-I-A-N, Blickle, B-L-I-C-K-L-E. It was covered in a number of publications and websites, including Bloomberg News, The New York Times, and Politico. I'm going to excerpt the coverage from the Politico of May 5th of 2020. This is by Quint Forgey, or Forgey, F-O-R-G-E-Y. Fed study ties 1918 flu pandemic to Nazi party gains. Excerpting this. A new academic paper produced by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York concludes that deaths caused by the 1918 influenza pandemic, quote, profoundly shaped German society, unquote, in subsequent years, and contributed to the strengthening of the Nazi Party. Quote, the paper, published this month and authored by New York Fed economist Christian Blickle, examined municipal spending levels and voter extremism in Germany from the time of the initial outbreak until 1933, and shows that, quote, areas which experienced a greater relative population decline, unquote, due to the pandemic, spent, again quoting, less per capita on their inhabitants in the following decade. The paper's findings are likely due to changes in societal preferences, unquote, following the 1918 outbreak, Blickle argues, suggesting the influenza pandemic's disproportionate toll on young people may have, quote, spurred resentment of foreigners among the survivors and driven voters to parties, quote, whose platform matched such sentiments, unquote. The conclusions come amid fears that the current coronavirus pandemic will shake up international politics and spur extremism around the world as officials and public health experts look to previous outbreaks for guidance on how to navigate the months and years to come. Many things to contemplate. There may be many listeners who wonder, you know, why the bleep is Dave talking about this so much. He is an anti-fascist. Why is he talking about this? Well, I think this focuses on some of the key areas of concern. Again, the paper by Mr. Blickel showed that areas that experienced a greater relative population decline spent less per capita on their inhabitants. I would note that the precipitous decline in employment, there is already a greater number of the unemployed in the U.S. than there was during the Great Depression, although the population was smaller. This has been reached much more quickly, and that is placing many institutions, from state and local governments to nonprofits to airlines, many businesses are really hurting, and many people obviously are hurting as well. In, for the record, 1127, the eugenic virus, basically taking a look at the profound economic effects and the effects that those economic effects were having on social policy and, in fact, just simply life and death. We pointed out that spending less was going to affect public transportation. It was going to affect education. It was going to affect nonprofits, and as well as state and local governments. And this ultimately would hurt the more disadvantaged people more. Again, note that areas which experienced a greater relative population decline due to the pandemic spent less per capita on their inhabitants in the following decades. Note also that the paper's findings are due to, quote, changes in societal preferences, and noting that the 1918 flu pandemic disproportionately harmed young people. So far, this pandemic is hurting older people more. It is having a more overtly eugenic aspect to it. But the fact of the matter is that this is a very puzzling virus, and as we will examine to a certain extent in this program, certainly in our next program, this is a very strange beast, and it is producing a number of things, including infections in younger people, which may be doing a lot of different things, and it is puzzling because younger people have been infected and may be fighting it off without producing antibodies. Older people are producing antibodies, and yet the virus is attacking T cells. But note that the effects of this virus are producing xenophobia. It, quote, spurred resentment of foreigners among the survivors and driven voters to parties whose platform matched such sentiments. And the paper has noted that extremist parties of the right benefited more than ones on the left. The pick quoting directly from that political article. The paper also shows that influenza deaths of 1918 are correlated with an increase in the share of votes run by right-wing extremists, such as the National Socialist Workers' Party in Germany's 1932 and 1933 elections. The paper points out the result is stronger for right-wing extremists and largely non-existent for left-wing extremists. Take that in combination with the following. It is well known that the effects of the Great Depression drove many people, not only in Germany, but elsewhere in the world, including the U.S., into the arms of the far right. Quoting from the Western edition of the New York Times, the banner headline across the front page, page A1, this from May 9th of 2020 by Nelson D. Schwartz and Ben Castleman, quote, U.S. unemployment is worse since depression. Again, biopsyop, anyone? Noting the following as well. This from the Daily Mail of the U.K. from May 8th of 2020, an AP story. COVID-19 has unleashed a tsunami of hate, unquote, with a surge in anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and attacks on Muslims, UN chief warns. It reads in part, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, G-U-T-E-R-R-E-S, said Friday, the coronavirus pandemic keeps unleashing a tsunami of hate and xenophobia, scapegoating and scaremongering, unquote, and appealed for, quote, an all-out effort to end hate speech globally, unquote. Guterres said, quote, Anti-foreigner sentiment has surged online and in the streets. Anti-Semitic conspiracy theories have spread, and COVID-19-related anti-Muslim attacks have occurred, unquote. The UN chief said migrants and refugees have been vilified as a source of the virus and then denied access to medical treatment, unquote, skipping down. With older persons among the most vulnerable, contemptible memes have emerged suggesting they are also the most expendable, he said. And journalists, whistleblowers, health professionals, aid workers, and human rights defenders are being targeted simply for doing their jobs. More about this in a minute. From The Guardian, the British Guardian of May 4th of 2020 by Lloyd Green. Under Trump, America has gone a bit late Weimar. We know how that ended. Actually, before I read this, no, actually, this is a bit late itself. This is early Nazi Germany. The road to Nazism in Germany, like the road to fascism in many places, was paved with a wave of assassinations and violence in the streets. The German assassination campaign actually had its most notable event in 1923 when Walter von Rathenau was assassinated by the Black Reichs there in Japan. There was the famous May 15th incident of May 15th, 1932, when Prime Minister Kai Inukai was assassinated by the Patriotic and Ultranationalist Society, specifically military cadets from the native land-loving school killed Prime Minister Inukai. Here in the U.S., for example, and there is a strong relationship between intelligence services and assassination and fascism. Abraham Lincoln was killed by the Confederate Secret Service. The head of the Confederate Secret Service was General Albert Pike. He was the co-founder of the Ku Klux Klan. Most histories list General Nathan Bedford Forrest as the founder of the Ku Klux Klan. He was actually the co-founder with the aforementioned Confederate Military Intelligence Chief General Albert Pike being the other co-founder. Adolf Hitler wasn't a lone nut. He was a German army intelligence officer under the political department of the Reichswehr under General von Lassow, and was infiltrated into the workers' rebellion in Munich, and then betrayed the Red Uprising. The various workers were identified and shot after Hitler pretended to be one of them. Then Hitler, along with other German army intelligence officers, was infiltrated into a moribund political party, the German Socialist Workers' Party, and then that became the German National Socialist Workers' Party, which was initially a front for Reichswehr intelligence and a vehicle for infiltrating the supposedly demobilized German army into civilian society for the purposes of fomenting political reaction. So this is actually a little late. It's not late Weimar Germany, although apparently Lloyd Green's source for this was a Trump administration insider, but it is worth reading. Again from The Guardian of May 4th of 2020 by Lloyd Green. Under Trump, America has gone a bit late Weimar. We know how that ended. Welcome to the U.S. in the age of coronavirus. Faces and fists pounded the windows of Ohio's Capitol like a zombie apocalypse. In Michigan, an armed crowd stormed the State House. Then, history repeated itself. Picking a page from his Charlottesville playbook, Donald Trump called the protesters good people and urged Gretchen Whitmer, the Democratic governor of Michigan, to make a deal, unquote, over the shutdown. The president tweeted that Whitmer should, quote, give a little and put out the fire, unquote. In other words, negotiate over the barrel of a gun. After all, his base was angry, unquote. One state over, in Illinois, an anti-shutdown protester waved a poster aimed at the state's Jewish governor, J.B. Pritzker, P-R-I-T-Z-K-E-R. Arbeit macht frei, J.B., the words that hung over the gates of Auschwitz. a Trump administration insider, conveyed that it was all a bit, unquote, reminiscent of the late Weimar Republic. We know how that ended. Society's guardrails crashed, the folk demanded its pound of flesh, and democracy made the frighteningly unimaginable possible. Hell became part of the here and now. Indeed, and in our last program, for the record, 1128, I spoke about some of the apartheid extremists linked to, who had created something of an underground brooder bond linked with the veterans of Project Coast, the South African apartheid regime's biological warfare unit, which received assistance from people in the CIA, and also had people like Stephen Hatfield, the initial suspect in the 2001 anthrax attacks, affiliated with both the SEALS Scouts and the White Afrikaner Resistance Movement in South Africa. His mentor, that is to say Hatfield's mentor, was the fellow who, Bill Patrick, who presided over the 1965 tests of biological warfare weapons that said in the New York City subway that showed that over 1 million people would be infected and killed if the pathogen had been lethal. And the epidemiology of the outbreak in the U.S. is absurd if one considers it. A random study indicated that up to a fifth of New York people, New York City residents, or 1.5 million people, have been infected. And now we're told, as of Friday's New York Times, that the outbreak in the U.S. spread outward from New York City. Well, how did it get into New York? How did it get to be that widespread? People sometimes say, well, they wouldn't do that. And, well, first of all, they did do that, obviously, in 1965. Reading again from Los Angeles Magazine, the article from July of 2001 by Edward Humes, H-U-M-E-S, The Medicine Man, about Dr. Larry Ford. They say that he, South African trade attaché Gideon Bauer, raved about the ability to keep whites in power through biological warfare, and he hinted at being part of a separate agenda of some sort of extra-governmental conspiracy like the one described in the Air Force Academy report that had plans to unleash biological agents worldwide on South Africa's enemies if the need should ever arise. Just be ready. Fitzpatrick, that's a fellow who was an FBI informant, remembers Bauer warning him cryptically, then asking, quote, how fast could you get your daughter out of the country if you had to, unquote. And again, the network spoken about, referred to as the Third Forest or the Spider Network or the Organisation, appears to be an altogether lethal and very powerful sort of post-apartheid underground brooderbond network, and they have the expertise of Project Coast and its veterans. And so when people say, well, they wouldn't do that, consider what Mr. Fitzpatrick said. I have to be honest, Fitzpatrick says, Gideon Bauer, the South African trade attaché, could be a great guy, but there was something dangerous about him. And when he started talking about the master plan and what a great service Ford had done for his country and about getting out of the country, it gave me chills. Just why do you think Gideon Bauer asked him, how fast could you get your daughter out of the country if you had to? Well, they obviously would give some thought to that. Now, thinking about eugenics thinking about what UN Secretary General Guterres warned about, thinking about the conclusions of the Fed paper authored by Christian Blickel about the effects of the 1918 flu pandemic on the rise of Nazism. Consider the following. This is from German Foreign Policy of May 1st of 2020 by Rüdiger, some commentary by Rüdiger, R-U-D-I-G-E-R, Minow, capital M-I-N-O-W. The post is Germany Threatens. Now, this talks about pronouncements by former German Minister of Finance Wolfgang Schäuble during the 2012 aftermath of the crash of 2008 and some recent comments he made about the value of life during the coronavirus pandemic. Not only has Schäuble moved up from being Minister of Finance, he is now considered by some standards to be the number two person in the Federal Republic. But his views, outright unabashed eugenic views, are in harmony with the views of other elements of the German government. Speaking about Schäuble's comments during the financial crisis, because the foreseeable social consequences would cost lives, Schäuble's tactics seemed to scare Europe with, quote, traumatic effects, unquote, and gave it a lesson in German economic ethics, Teutonic brutality and at all costs. Terrifying, unquote, was the assessment the U.S. Treasury Secretary made following his conversation with Schäuble. Paris and Madrid were also apprehensive. Athens called Schäuble an arsonist, unquote, on a rampage throughout Europe. And then talking about an interview that Schäuble gave in the middle of the coronavirus outbreak, considering things like should people have to die because they are deprived of state resources. In the interview, Schäuble has elaborated in 2020 on what he had already made clear in 2012 during the international financial crisis. Quote, if I hear that everything else must take a back seat to the preservation of life, I must say that this in such unequivocalness is not right. Protection of human life does not have an absolute priority in our basic law. Death is coming sooner or later anyway. We are all going to die. Schäuble's statements are exemplary and are of, quote, national significance, unquote, declared the German Ethics Council. The council is government-financed and prioritizes, quote, economic rights, unquote. They should not, meaning economic rights, should not, quote, be unconditionally subordinated, unquote, to the protection of human life. There is a sort of rivalry of values. If the value of life would have priority, quote, freedom, unquote, would suffer, according to the unanimous judgment of the Ethics Department of the German Economic Institute, or IW. From the standpoint of German constitutional law, according to a former judge on the Constitutional Court, the state's efficiency, unquote, would encounter its limits if life were given top priority, where, quote, everything else must lag arbitrarily far behind. In fact, the government's obligation to the Constitution's highest value, the protection of life, must be relativized, just as Schäuble is doing, confirmed the majority of Germany's government leaders. Prominent voices from the parliamentary opposition parties are also in agreement that the protection of human life as the primary legitimized duty of the state is a question of assessment, unquote. From this, the FDP draws the conclusion, therefore, please reopen the businesses. Enable production. In harmony with Germany's export economy lobbyists and the president of the Bundestag, the chair of the Greens, is also one of the relativizers. He finds himself in an alleged dilemma, unquote, when he thinks of the protection of life during the corona crisis, while a fellow Green municipal politician speaks in plain operational terms. Quote, let me tell you bluntly, we may be saving people in Germany who, because of their age or serious previous medical conditions, may be dead anyway in half a year. This is an overt statement of what of eugenic policy, and I would note the characterization by German foreign policy, which was published in Germany, by the way, that Schäuble's tactics seemed to scare Europe with traumatic effects and gave it a lesson in German economic ethics, Teutonic brutality and at all costs, unquote. Well, actually, Germany has done fairly well due to the fact that they have a strong social safety net and more hospital beds per capita than many other countries. But the plutonic brutality, the ethics of Wolfgang Schäuble, and endorsed by many in Germany as well, many people in the German power structure, is in fact significant far beyond the borders of Germany. And I think in looking at what was from that Guardian article and from the Daily Mail reportage on UN Secretary General Guterres' assessment, I think we can see something very, very significant. Now, to the subject, a hotly debated one about whether or not the virus could have been made in a laboratory. And I should stress that we'll try to get to this more in future programs, that many of the people who are poo-pooing this maybe doing so for good reasons, in that the far right and the Trump administration, they're basically indistinguishable, are making claims not only in this country but around the world, but yet China either deliberately engineered this and then released it, or that it accidentally escaped from a Chinese laboratory and it couldn't have been made genetically modified. That is simply a specious argument, because any virus can be created in a laboratory in its entirety. When this technology, we've spoken about that before, we will review that again. When this technology was coming online, when it was in the wings, there was an article more than 21 years ago on the BBC from January 21st of 1999, Health, Genetic Weapons Alert, excerpting that. Advances in genetic knowledge could be misused to develop powerful biological weapons that could be tailored to strike at specific ethnic groups, the British Medical Association has warned. A British Medical Association report, Biotechnology, Weapons, and Humanity, says that concerted international acclaim is necessary to block the development of new biological weapons. It warns the window of opportunity to do so is very narrow, as technology is developing rapidly and becoming ever more accessible. Recipes for developing biological agents are freely available on the Internet, the report warns. The British Medical Association report warns that, and this is very important, the BMA report warns that legitimate research into microbiological agents and genetically targeted therapeutic agents could be difficult to distinguish from research geared towards developing more effective weapons. One more time. The BMA report warns that legitimate research into microbiological agents and genetically targeted therapeutic agents could be difficult to distinguish from research geared towards developing more effective weapons. Skipping down, Dr. Vivienne Nathanson, N-A-T-H-A-N-S-O-N, the BMA, British Medical Association, head of health policy research, said, quote, "The history of humanity is a history of war. Scientific advances quickly lead to developments in weapons technology. Biotechnology and genetic knowledge are equally open to this type of malign use. Doctors and other scientists have an important role in prevention. They have a duty to persuade politicians and international agencies such as the UN to take this threat seriously and to take action to prevent the production of such weapons." I think many people who are poo-pooing the notion that the virus could have been created in a laboratory, and any virus can be created in a laboratory, some of them are doing so, I think, to counter the right-wing tsunami that, yeah, China made this and it was then distributed by Chinese agents or Jews, you name it. And the Trump administration is basically calling Biden Beijing Biden and is flogging this, and people in the Trump camp, like Rudy Giuliani and others, are going even further. Many of the people who are poo-pooing the documented fact that any virus can be made in a laboratory are doing so to counteract the right-wing propaganda, not unlike many liberals and progressives who, in the wake of the publication of the Warren Report, poo-pooed the notion of conspiracy because they were afraid that the painting of Oswald red and painting him as an agent of the Soviet Union or Castro's Cuba would lead to a Third World War. There also is the fact that there, and we'll get to this when we talk about the wealth concentration virus, there is a lot of money to be had from federal grants or institutional grants for developing either a cure or a vaccine or test. And if you come too close to the obvious possibility that not only could it have been created in a laboratory, but that DARPA was heavily funding research of this kind. Many of those projects, by the way, joined with people who were operating in good faith. But once the research is published, DARPA has the best supercomputers twined with the best artificial intelligence, and using gene editing technology, any virus can be made from scratch. Reviewing ever so briefly from MIT Technology Review from February 15th of 2020 by Antonio Regalado. Biologists rush to recreate the China coronavirus from its DNA code. In one University of North Carolina lab, there is a different race. Researchers are trying to create a copy of the virus from scratch. And this notes that led by Ralph Barich, B-A-R-I-C, an expert in coronaviruses, which get their name, blah, blah, blah. The North Carolina team expects to recreate the virus starting only from computer readouts of its genetic sequence posted online by Chinese labs last month. And note the following, that the technology immediately created bioweapon worries, quoting from the article. And also, researchers at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention drove that point home in 2005 when they resurrected the influenza virus that killed tens of millions in 1918 and 19. We already looked at the Federal Reserve paper talking about the political and sociological effects of that pandemic. And we have spoken in For the Record 55 and in For the Record 11, 18 and others about the fact that in 1997, military scientists from Fort Detrick recovered part of the genome of the 1918-1919 influenza virus, an extinct life form. It was then recreated in its entirety from scratch in a laboratory, and that is the deadliest upper respiratory pathogen on record. It was extinct, but it was recreated, and the scientists who did that said, well, this was to help prevent future pandemics. Many of those military scientists, and the fact of the matter is that the military is not in the business of maintaining public health. They are in the business of warfighting. That is their skill, and that skill basically entails killing people and destroying property. The point being that as this article points out, the remarkable ability to boot up, unquote, viruses from genetic instructions is made possible by companies that manufacture custom DNA molecules. And something we will go into in our next program, and the fact that this is a very unusual virus with an enormous, highly varied symptomatology. From Yahoo News, an article from Yahoo Finance of April 30th of 2020, by Adriana Belmonte, B-E-L-M-O-N-T-E, coronavirus expert. We've not encountered a virus quite like this. Skipping down. I've been studying viruses since 1978. Dr. James Hildreth, Meharry Medical College CEO and an infectious disease expert based out of Nashville, told Yahoo Finances on the move this week, quote, and I think it's fair to say we've not encountered a virus quite like this just because of the broad range of tissue types in our body it infects. More about that. There was a paper that was in Nature magazine and based in large measure on the work of Christian, K-R-I-S-T-I-A-N, Anderson from the Scripps Institute. By the way, I misidentified him as a hero. I read the name too quickly and read it as Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-A-I-N, a female name. Actually, it's Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-I-A-N, the same as the Fed economist, and it is a he. However, that paper in Nature magazine is now the standard, the gold standard of scientific pronouncement on whether the virus could have been made in the laboratory, and it says no, and it is just plain wrong. I'm going to do the best I can, and I will come back to this next week. There are two articles in the publication GM Watch. That is a publication critical of genetically modified organisms. The first is from GM Watch of April 22nd of 2020 by Claire Robinson, R-O-B-I-N-S-O-N. Was the COVID-19 virus genetically engineered? And in these next two stories, we are going to examine several ways in which the virus could have been genetically engineered apart from the gene editing and basically that technology that was discussed in the MIT Technology Review article, something analogous to the 3D printer in which one can simply make a functional firearm from scratch. One of the things to note in here is that one of the techniques that can be used was actually the focal point of a Nobel Prize that was awarded in science. And note also the British Medical Association observation by Dr. Vivienne Nathanson back in January of 1999 that legitimate biological and medical research could mask research that could be used for biological warfare. Again, from GM Watch of April 22nd of 2020, this is highly technical. I will come back to these articles in our next show, perhaps the next two. It's going to take some time. And by the way, if people would like to read these, they will be in the written descriptions for this and the next program when those are up. Since the COVID-19 pandemic took off, speculation has been rife about its origins. The truth is that nobody knows for certain how the virus took hold. But despite that uncertainty, suggestions that the virus may have been genetically engineered or otherwise lab-generated have been rejected as conspiracy theories, unquote, incompatible with the evidence. Yet the main evidence that is cited as ending all speculation about the role of genetic engineering and as proving the virus could only have been the product of natural evolution turns out to be surprisingly weak. Let's take a look at it. The authors of a recently published paper in the Journal of Nature Medicine argue that the SARS-CoV-2 virus driving the pandemic arose through natural mutation and selection in animal, notably bats and pangolins, or human hosts, and not through laboratory manipulation and accidental release. And they say that they have identified two key characteristics of the virus that prove this: the absence of a previously used virus backbone and the way in which the virus binds to human cells. As you would expect of a virus that can cause a global pandemic, SARS-CoV-2 is good at infecting human cells. It does this by binding with high affinity, that is, it binds strongly to the cell surface membrane protein known as ACE2, which enables it to enter human cells. But basing their argument on a computer modeling system, the authors of the Nature Medicine paper argue that the interaction between the virus and the ACE2 receptor is, quote, not ideal, unquote. They say that the receptor binding domain, or RBD, amino acid sequence of the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, the part of the spike protein that allows the virus to bind to the ACE2 protein on human cell surfaces, is different from those shown in the SARS-CoV family of viruses to be optimal for receptor binding. Again, is different from those shown in the SARS-CoV family of viruses shown to be optimal for receptor binding. They appear to argue, based on their and others' computer modeling data, that they have identified the, quote, ideal, unquote, CoV spike protein RBD amino acid sequence for ACE2 receptor binding. They then seem to imply that if you were to genetically engineer SARS-CoV for optimal human ACE2 binding and infectivity, you would use the RBD amino acid sequence predicted by their computer modeling. But they point out that SARS-CoV-2 does not have exactly the same computer program predicted RBD amino acid sequence. Thus, they conclude that it could not have been genetically engineered, stating, quote, "This is strong evidence that SARS-CoV-2 is not the product of purposeful manipulation," unquote. To put it simply, the authors are saying that SARS-CoV-2 was not deliberately engineered because if it were, it would have been designed differently. However, the London-based molecular geneticist Dr. Michael Antonio, A-N-T-O-N-I-O-U, commented that this line of reasoning fails to take into account that there are a number of laboratory-based systems that can select for high-affinity RBD variants that are able to take into account the complex environment of a living organism. This complex environment may impact the efficiency with which the SARS-CoV spike protein can find the ACE2 receptor and bind to it. An RBD selected via these more realistic, real-world experimental systems would be just as ideal, unquote, or even more so for human ACE2 binding than any RBD that a computer model could predict. And, crucially, it would likely be different in amino acid sequence. So the fact that SARS-CoV-2 doesn't have the same RBD amino acid sequence as the one that the computer program predicted in no way rules out the possibility that it was genetically engineered. Dr. Antonio said that the author's reasoning is not conclusive because it is based largely on computer modeling, which he says is, quote, "not definitive, but only predictive. It cannot tell us whether any given virus would be optimized for infectivity in a real-world scenario, such as in the human body. That's because the environment of the human body will influence how the virus interacts with the receptor. You can't model that accurately with computer modeling, as there are simply too many variables to factor into the equation," unquote. Dr. Antonio added, quote, "People can put too much faith in computer programs, but they are only a beginning. And then you have to prove whether the computer program's prediction is correct or not by direct experimentation in a living organism. This has not been done in the case of this hypothesis, so it remains unproven," unquote. It is even possible that SARS-CoV-2 was optimized using a living organism model, resulting in a virus that is better at infecting humans than any computer model could possibly predict. The authors of the Nature Medicine article seem to assume that the only way to genetically engineer a virus is to take an already known virus and then engineer it to have the new properties you want. And by the way, that can be done. They can make any virus from scratch to order. The 1918 flu pandemic virus was made from scratch. The deadliest upper respiratory pathogen ever recorded, it was extinct, and they recreated it from scratch. And Dr. Ralph Barrich, who, if not in this program, we will come back to in our next program, because he was partnering with scientists from China in the Wuhan Institute of Virology that has been targeted by the State Department and Trump and people like that, saying, well, that's where the virus came from. Dr. Ralph Barrich was working in that his project at the University of North Carolina was in tandem with Chinese virologists. But more about that probably next week. One more time. The authors of the Nature Medicine article seem to assume that the only way to genetically engineer a virus is to take an already known virus and then engineer it to have the new properties you want. On this premise, they looked for evidence of an already known virus that could have been used in the engineering of SARS-CoV-2. And they failed to find that evidence. They stated, quote, genetic data irrefutably show that SARS-CoV-2 is not derived from any previously used virus backbone, unquote. But Dr. Antonio told us that while the authors did indeed show that SARS-CoV-2 was unlikely to have been built by deliberate genetic engineering from a previously used virus backbone, that is not the only way of constructing a virus. There is another method by which an enhanced infectivity virus can be engineered in the lab. A well-known alternative process that could have been used has the cumbersome name of, quote, directed iterative evolutionary selection process, unquote. In this case, it would involve using genetic engineering to generate a large number of randomly mutated versions of the SARS-CoV spike protein receptor binding domain, or RBD, which would then be selected for strong binding to the ACE2 receptor and consequently high infectivity of human cells. This selection can be done either with purified proteins or, better still, with a mixture of whole coronavirus preparations and human cells in tissue culture. Alternatively, the SARS-CoV spike protein variants can be genetically engineered within what is known as a phage display library, unquote. A phage, P-H-A-G-E, is a virus that infects bacteria and can be genetically engineered to express on its exterior coat the CoV spike protein with a large number of variants of the RBD. This preparation of phage, displaying on its surface a library, unquote, of CoV spike protein variants, is then added to human cells under laboratory culture conditions in order to select for those that bind to the ACE2 receptor. This process is repeated under more and more stringent binding conditions until CoV spike protein variants with a high binding affinity are isolated. Once any of the above selection procedures for high affinity interaction of SARS-CoV spike protein with ACE2 has been completed, then whole infectious CoV with these properties can be manufactured. Such a directed, iterative, evolutionary selection process is a frequently used method in laboratory research. So there is little or no possibility that the Nature Medicine articles haven't heard of it, not least as it is considered so scientifically important that its inventors were awarded the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 2018. Yet the possibility that this is the way that SARS-CoV-2 arose is not addressed by the Nature Medicine article authors, and so its use has not been disproven. In sum, the Nature Medicine article authors offer no evidence that the SARS-CoV-2 virus could not have been genetically engineered. That's not to say that it was, of course. We can't know one way or the other on the basis of currently available information. Dr. Antonio wrote a short letter to Nature Medicine to point out these omissions in the author's case. Nature Medicine has no method of submitting a simple letter to the editor, so Dr. Antonio had to submit it to a matters arising commentary, which the journal defines as presenting, quote, challenges or clarifications, unquote, to an original published work. Dr. Antonio's comments were titled, SARS-CoV-2 could have been created through laboratory manipulation, unquote. However, Nature Medicine refused to publish them on the grounds that, quote, we do not feel that they advance or clarify understanding, unquote, of the original article. The journal offered no scientific argument to rebut his points. In our view, these points do offer clarification to the original article, and what's more, there is a strong public interest case for making them public. That's why we reproduce Dr. Antonio's letter below this article with his permission. There is, incidentally, another possible way that SARS-CoV-2 could have been developed in a laboratory, but in this case, without using genetic engineering. This was pointed out by Nikolai Petrovsky, P-E-T-R-O-V-S-K-Y, a researcher at the College of Medicine and Public Health at Flinders, F-L-I-N-D-E-R-S University in South Australia. Petrovsky says that coronaviruses can be cultured in lab dishes with cells that have the human ACE2 receptor. Over time, the virus will gain adaptations that let it efficiently bind to those receptors. Along the way, that virus would pick up random genetic mutations that pop up, but don't do anything noticeable. One more time. Over time, the virus will gain adaptations that let it efficiently bind to those receptors. Along the way, that virus will pick up random genetic mutations that pop up, but don't do anything noticeable. The results of these experiments is a virus that is highly virulent in humans, but is sufficiently different that it no longer resembles the original bat virus, unquote, Petrovsky said. Because the mutations are acquired randomly by selection, there is no signature of a human gene jockey, but this is clearly a virus still created by human intervention, unquote. Dr. Antonio agrees that this method is possible, but he points out that waiting for nature to produce the desired mutations is a lot slower than using genetic engineering to generate a large number of random mutations that you can select for the desired outcome by a directed iterative evolutionary procedure. Because genetic engineering greatly speeds up the process, it is by far the most efficient way to generate novel pathogenic viruses in the lab. And we will not have time to read the entire next article, also from GM Watch. I will include both in the description for this program, which will be available by the latter portion of this week. But again, none of this talks about the gene ordering process that was discussed in the MIT Technology Review, similar, analogous perhaps, to the 3D printer. Any virus can be created in a laboratory. And if, for the sake of argument, someone is going to create a virus in a laboratory, then they would not necessarily want it to look like it was created in a laboratory. Also, the outbreak, the COVID-19 outbreak, occurs in a full-press covert operations array concert, so to speak, that is well documented, that we have spoken about in many programs, and that we will come back to later. The notion that China would genetically modify it simply does not make sense. And, we'll talk more about the various scenarios in future programs, but we're going to begin with this particular article. We won't have anywhere near enough time to talk about this. This also is from GM Watch from April 27th of 2020. Another expert challenges assertions that SARS-CoV-2 was not genetically engineered. Another expert on biotechnology has attacked the evidence being used to quash suggestions that SARS SARS-CoV-2, the virus strain that causes COVID-19, might have been genetically engineered. Professor Stuart Newman, M-E-W-M-A-N, professor of cell biology and anatomy at New York Medical College, says that a key argument used to deny that there could be a genetically engineered strain that escaped from a laboratory actually points to the exact opposite. In other words, it indicates that SARS-CoV-2 could well be genetically engineered and that it could have escaped from a lab, or that it could have been deliberately deployed. Note, too, that none of this talks about the fact that Fort Detrick, Army Medical Institute of Infectious, Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, was shut down in early August of 2019 for safety violations. One more time, the last part of this. Professor Stuart Newman, professor of cell biology and anatomy at New York Medical College, says that a key argument used to deny that there could be a genetically engineered strain that escaped from a laboratory actually points to the exact opposite. In other words, it indicates that SARS-CoV-2 could well be genetically engineered and that it could have escaped from a lab. The evidence that is being cited as proving that SARS-CoV-2 is, quote, not a laboratory construct or a purposefully manipulated virus, unquote, is a paper published by the immunologist Christian Anderson and colleagues in Nature Medicine. As Adam Loring, L-A-U-R-I-N-G-A, an associate professor of microbiology, immunology, and infectious diseases at the University of Michigan Medical School has noted, Anderson's paper argues that, quote, the SARS-CoV-2 virus has some key differences in specific genes relative to previously identified coronaviruses, the ones a laboratory would be working with. This constellation of changes makes it unlikely that it is a result of a laboratory, quote, escape, unquote. But Professor Newman says that this is totally unconvincing because, quote, the key differences, unquote, were in regions of the coronavirus spike protein that were the subject of genetic engineering experiments in labs around the world, mainly in the U.S. and China, for 2 decades, and skipping down. The Nature Medicine paper points to variations in 2 sites of the spike protein of the new coronavirus that the authors claim must have arisen by natural selection in the wild. However, genetic engineering of one of these sites, the ACE2 receptor binding domain, has been proposed since 2005 in order to help generate vaccines against these viruses. It is puzzling that the authors of the Nature Medicine commentary did not cite this paper, which appeared in the prominent journal Science. Moreover, Newman added, the second site that Anderson et al. Assert arose by natural means, a target of enzyme cleavage not usually found in this class of viruses, was in fact introduced by genetic engineering in a similar coronavirus in a paper they do cite. This was done to explore mechanisms of pathogeneticity. And I would note, as the BBC article noted, that weapons research in this regard could be masked as legitimate medical research. We'll deal more about this in our next program. This concludes, For the Record, program number 1129, BioPsyOp Apocalypse Now, Part 5, The Magic Virus Theory, Part 2, being recorded on May 11th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.